You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Commander Tom broadcasting live from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Yes, the state of Governor, what's his name again? Oh, yeah, Perry. Of course, we know what his name is. And that, of course, is my lovely co-host, Paul Lozano-Osman, broadcasting live from Boston, Massachusetts. Yes, I'm in the home state of Governor Rick Perry, but I'm not here campaigning for him. I'm at an undisclosed location on secret business, but yes, I am here, and I'm going to be here for a few more weeks, so get used to hearing me broadcast from Dallas, Texas. If you're a Perry fan, you're probably happy about that. If you're not, hey, sorry. But as you all know, this past Monday, I made it official. I officially endorsed Herman Cain for President of the United States of America. What do you think about that, Paula?
I'm impressed that he would be the one that you would go behind and endorse.
And why is that?
Well, I'm still unsure of what really his platform is. I mean, he's into the 999 thing, and I don't think anybody's really still taking him seriously. You know, even watching the debate last night, I still don't think people are taking him seriously.
Well, I guess you're right. Well, there are a lot of reasons I've endorsed him. I've looked closely at a lot of his policies and his position on a lot of important issues. But I also like the fact that he's not a career politician. He's not a Republican in name only. He's a conservative. Unfortunately, we have too many rhinos in this race, and they're going to say whatever they have to say to get by. Now, all politicians are going to kind of vacillate a little bit here and there because really their goal is to get elected. That's just the way it's going to be. But, you know, you even see a guy like Ron Paul, who a lot of people think, you know, Mr. Stick to his principles and guns, but you see him vacillate every now and then. And that's kind of the game. But overall, I feel that Herman Cain has done less of that. He's been very honest about his position. He's not a career politician. And I think he is genuinely honest about his intentions. Now, that's not to say that the other candidates aren't. But I'm just tired of career politicians. I just want to clean the house, whether it's the presidential race, Congress, at the state level. I am tired of career politicians. I want a clean house. And he's one good way to do that. The other thing is I'm really getting tired of the left, you know, propping up, believe it or not, propping up rhinos. When I watch liberal newspapers and liberal media at some point give their endorsements, and they give it to a particular Republican in the race, that tells you right there, that's not the guy I want. And so I guarantee you that the liberal media will not endorse Cain in the presidential primary. It will be somebody like either Romney or, I don't know who else they would go after. They won't go after Newt Gingrich, but who knows, maybe even Newt. But they're not going to endorse Cain, I guarantee it, because he is too conservative and really stuck to his guns on issues. So you'll be hearing more about that. We'll talk a little bit about the campaign today and what's going on specifically in Florida. But Florida is gearing up. The Cain for President campaign is moving into position rapidly here in Florida. And we'll be talking more about that in the next coming weeks. So with that all said, Paula, you were at a wedding on Monday. Is that correct?
I was, yep.
And how was it?
It was very nice. They're both very, very good people. They've known each other for quite some time. You know, a young couple just starting out, and they had it at a small venue over in Bristol, Rhode Island, right near the water, and they're as happy as clams.
So far.
Next to my godson's mother's wedding last month, it was pretty much one of the best weddings I had ever been to, and I don't typically cry at weddings, but this one I did, as well as the others. So.
Aha. Yeah. Well, good. It sounds like you had a nice Columbus Day weekend. And speaking of Columbus Day weekend, you sent me some funny stuff. I think it was this morning I got it. Yeah. And some of these were pretty funny. And a little bit had to do with Christopher Columbus. Now, everybody out there knows my position on illegal immigration. You also know that my last name is Garcia, and my family's heritage goes back to Mexico. So I can say this joke. Anybody can say it. But I can absolutely say it, and I'm going to say it. Christopher Columbus claimed America for Spain. If the British had never come here, we'd all be speaking Spanish, as opposed to just half the country that's speaking Spanish today. That one made me laugh. I told a couple of my buddies that one this morning, and they got a kick out of that. But that's true. We are becoming the Spanish nation that the Spaniards tried to claim and did own quite a portion of it when we were a new nation. The Louisiana Purchase, a lot of that was owned by the Spanish, you know, down around New Orleans into the Floridas was owned by the French initially, and then they gave it to Spain sort of as a way of buying their support in their battles with the British and on. But, yeah, we could have gone a lot of different ways on that stuff. Let's see. It's sad to say, but this is all from the Jay Leno Show, by the way. The banks were closed for the holiday. Some of them are expected to reopen tomorrow. Oh, man. And there were a lot of banks in the Great Depression that just never reopened after a bank holiday was declared by FDR. So let's see. What else? Here, this is a good one from Conan. The greatest thing about the new iPhone 4S is that it comes with an app that pre-orders the iPhone 5. I don't know why anybody would buy it. If you actually happen to need a new phone right now, yeah, get the iPhone 4S. But I don't know of anybody that would say, hey, I got a perfectly good working iPhone right now. I've got a 4. Yeah, I need to trade it in for the latest, newest, hottest thing. No, absolutely not. Wait for the iPhone 5. And I don't know when it's probably a year for that thing.
My kid said the same thing. I went and got the 4, and he went, Mom, he said, you know as well as I do that they're going to come out with a 5. And I said, no, they're not. And then they did, and he went, didn't I tell you?
yeah, exactly. Well, let's see. This is a little bit of a poke on Herman Cain. Although I'm a supporter now and involved in the campaign, I'll do a Herman Cain joke. And this goes back to his pizza days, obviously. Herman Cain compared his run for president to Moses leading his people out of Egypt. Cain said it took Moses 40 years to lead his people out of Egypt, but he can do it in 30 minutes or less, guaranteed, or your money back. Oh, boy. Let's see what else. here's a good one. Rick, so for all you people in Texas, yes, I'm broadcasting live in Texas. Rick Perry has admitted that he's so tired he can't sleep. He should listen to one of his own speeches. I love that. Now, I don't really like David Letterman that much. I hope I don't hurt anybody's feelings here, but every now and then he gets some funny stuff. Here's the top 10 things Columbus said when he arrived in America. I'm just going to skip around. I'm not going to do them all. He said, number 2, I hope I'm not too late to pre-order the iPhone 4S. Let's see. One day they'll name the whole country after me. Well, at least a city in Ohio. Now, this is, as an airline guy, I can relate to this. What do you mean, the Pinta lost my luggage? Now, this is what Columbus would be saying to the Indians. Who wants smallpox?
Oh, no.
And number 10, I did these in backwards order. I thought I was doing them in the right order. But number 10, this would be my favorite. What should we do first, unpack or hit the bar? yeah, those Spaniards. And he was actually Italian, but those Spaniards, yeah, looking for the first bar they can find. And it was also over the Columbus Day weekend, it was the Canadian Thanksgiving. And, of course, my wife is Canadian. And I asked her, what is it that you Canadians are celebrating on Thanksgiving Day? And she didn't know, so I looked it up. In part, the Canadians are celebrating Columbus Day. That what they've done is they've tied Thanksgiving to Columbus Day, but they're not really celebrating Columbus Day in the U.S. But they're just a general day of Thanksgiving for what they have. Not like we do in the States, Thanksgiving is about their first pilgrims that came across and, you know, broke bread with the Indians and all that kind of stuff. But so it's just a general day of Thanksgiving. So that was the Canadian Thanksgiving. And even though my wife is Canadian, she kind of forgot about it until she was looking on the calendar over the weekend. She said, Thanksgiving tomorrow. Yeah. So usually what we've done in the past, actually, is we've celebrated both Thanksgivings together on the Canadian Thanksgiving in October because it's very convenient. It's on Columbus Day weekend, so it's a long weekend. So she usually buys a big turkey and cooks that up, and we have turkey dinner. And then we just, you know, don't worry too much about November. We go travel or do something, whatever, and maybe go out someplace for some turkey, but don't get bogged down in trying to make it a big celebration weekend. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all right, that's that kind of stuff. Let's see. I want to remind people that on Monday we had a guest who I wasn't expecting. He had some trouble getting a hold of us or making it on the show a couple weeks ago, Dr. Michael Kaufman. And he did join us on Monday, so go back and take a listen to that show. He talked about, we talked about his book called Rescuing a Broken America. Great book. Very relevant to today, and it's based on a book that he wrote several years ago, or in the early 2000s, and that he's edited and shrunk down in size about what's going on and what we need to turn our country around. So a very good book. He's also a scientist that's very well-versed in global warming, so we had a little discussion about that. It was a great show. And, of course, I want to throw out there to everybody about our good friend Joan Flowers, who doesn't miss a show, that we are still trying to come up with a way to get her father, a World War II war hero veteran that passed away some years ago, buried in Arlington. He's currently in an unmarked grave in the Chicago area, and we're still working on that. So anybody out there that's got a Twitter account, anybody who's got a Facebook account, make a note of that and tell people to check out our interview on April 19th. And send a message into your local congressman or senator about this injustice that has been done to a World War II hero. Part of the problem is this. There was a fire in, I believe, 72-73 in the National Archives that destroyed a bunch of veterans' records, and his record was one of those. So there's no way to prove precisely what he did during his 3 years in the war, but we do know this. He went in as a private. He came out as a warrant officer. That's a huge promotional move. That's pretty much all the way up the enlisted chain in just 3 years. But we don't know what he actually did because those records were destroyed, and it doesn't seem fair that somebody who was that kind of a hero during the war and clearly was because of his promotion rate is going to be sitting in an unmarked grave for, you know, eternity in the Chicago area. Yeah, one reason is get him out of Chicago, number one. But two, let's get him into Arlington. So go ahead and take a look at our website. There's information there. You can go to Facebook page and, of course, my Twitter account, The American Hour. Go to @TheAmericanHour on Twitter, and you'll find out more information about. And, of course, there's always Joan Flowers. Go to her Twitter account. She's always putting information out there. It's Flowers Joan. So it'd be @FlowersJoan on Twitter. Okay, so please take a look at that. All right, let's talk about some of the headlines here, Paula, because I think, you know, people are busy. They've been working all day. They might look at the news, but you're not going to get everything that's out there. Apparently the Saudis, they're a little bit nervous about Iran and its bravado, and so they're kind of jumping out there and saying, yeah, Iran needs to pay for what they've done, the attempted assassination of a Saudi ambassador in Washington, D.C. You know that story, Paula, that the feds kind of set a guy up, but the bottom line is Iran was behind this, the government of Iran, and in organizing a local jihadist here in the U.S. to then contact some Mexican drug cartels to carry out the deed. And so we'll come back to that here in a second. But, you know, the headline on Drudge is War Drums, Iran Calls Terror Plot a Lie. Yeah, I kind of doubt that. But in any case, here's some of the other headlines that are making the non-mainstream media news. We know that there were more shoulder launch capable weapons in Libya than anywhere in the world, something like 20,000 shoulder launch missiles. And those Libyan weapons have been flooding into Egypt. Yes, it's an Arab Spring, and this is the sign of and the face of democracy. Let's see, every Christian church has been destroyed and Christians have been slaughtered. But, yeah, for all the liberal losers on the left, this is the face of democracy. If that's the face of democracy, get the heck out of the United States of America, because that's not the face of the democracy I want to see here. Let's see. What else? Of course, you know, Eric Holder has been subpoenaed by the Congress for his lying under testimony. Now, well, he wasn't under oath, but this next time he shows up, he's going to be under oath, and they're going to ask him, so what did you tell the president and his staff? What precisely is going to be under oath? Boy, if he tells a fib there, he's going to jail for that one. He's already broken the law, but let's see. Oh, there's – I'm going to pull this up here. If you, there's a website that's got a photo of – gosh, it's actually right on Drudge. If you go to Drudge Report and look for the link that talks about Obama in 28 versus 2011, he did a rally in Pittsburgh. And the photo is a photo of a packed arena. I mean, a packed, you know, sports arena in Pittsburgh. And here just the other day, it looks like a school, an elementary school auditorium with half the seats empty. So he's not getting the traction he got before, because people figured out that he's just full of smoke. He's an empty suit, and he's incompetent at what he's doing. The Occupy Wall Street folks, and I touched a bit on that and talked about it on Monday, that they're the modern-day Animal Farm. We don't need to go into that today, but they had a little rally in Washington, D.C., and 53 people showed up. Woohoo! Big stuff.
Wow.
And if people like to know where their stimulus money went, some of the stimulus money went to put a terminal, brand new airport terminal, in a terminal in Monroe Regional Airport that doesn't connect to the airplanes. So you can't actually go into the terminal and go on a jet bridge to connect the airplane. You actually have to ride a bus out there. And it was a great design, but there's your stimulus money, because people wanted money, and they just grabbed it up and didn't necessarily use it appropriately. Let's see. Oh, the Occupy Wall Street people. Yeah, we want to talk about Tea Partiers that are racist, except there's no actual evidence of that whatsoever. But we got protesters proclaiming on their occupying of Wall Street that Jews control Wall Street. Jews. Wow, that's not racist at all. And these are the people that Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama, Joe the moron Biden have thrown their lot in with. People that defecate in the streets, urinate in the streets, trash parks and private property, pass out condoms, engage in sexual activity in public. That's who they say are the face of democracy and that they're throwing their lot in with. That just goes to show you the scumbags that we have in the Democrat Party that are in power in Washington. They are scum. Now, you can say what you want about the Republicans, but here's what I have to say about Tea Partiers. I've been to many Tea Party rallies. I've been to many Tea Party functions and organizations and other functions that Tea Partiers showed up to. There was no trashing of public and private property. There was nobody getting arrested. There was nobody doing all those things in the middle of the street that I just mentioned. None of that. Zero. But those are the people that the liberal left loons, the flat earth, no growthers, are saying are the actual terrorists. And then if you go to the website of Occupy Wall Street to see, well, what are they really about? They don't explain what they're about. They're an incoherent bunch of hippies and druggies. And the people that don't fall into that category are there just to take advantage of the protesting because they just like protesting. There's professional protesters that are showing up. This is not a democratic movement. This is not the face of democracy. It's the face of stupidity. I'm not even going to say what other hosts have said. It's the face of socialism or Marxism or anarchy. No, it's the face of stupidity, bold-faced stupidity and idiocy. That's what the Wall Street protesters are. So anybody want to call in and argue with me on that one? I've listened to other talk shows where callers have called in And when questioned about, well, what do you do for a living? What's going on? It turns out that they're losers. They don't have a job, or they're professional, wackos that are writing, articles and books on conspiracy theories. You know, the moon is made of cheese. That's the fact. And NASA never landed on the moon. On and on. You know, it all. They're a bunch of loons. So that's what I have to say about Occupy Wall Street. Yeah, Occupy this. How about that? Jay Carney wouldn't talk about the secret kill list. I'm not even going to talk about that. Oh, okay, well, I just want to know if my name's on it. That's all. I just want to know. Joe, the stupidest senator and now dumbest vice president in the history of the United States, has warned us that there will be more rapes and murders if the president's job bill isn't passed. How is that coherent at all? I wonder if this guy is just done his – had so much alcohol or drugs or whatever in his life that he's just, messed up like some of these rock stars that have done that for years and years. But I don't think Joe's that kind of guy. I think he's just basically stupid to begin with. He's been stupid his whole life. Did you catch this, Paula? That Obama apparently wanted to do a special presentation in Japan to apologize to the Japanese for dropping bombs on them in World War II. Dropping not nukes, but they were hydrogen bombs. Did you hear about that?
Why would he want to do that?
That's his nature. He loves to apologize for America. The guy hates America. He wants to, if you go to investors.com, here's where it's at, investors.com. It's a editorial, and let's see if I can find out who wrote it. I looked at this earlier today. It was written by, it doesn't even tell you who it was written by, but investors.com. And just look for apologies not accepted. The Japanese said, no, we're not going to, no, don't come here, don't apologize. We're not going to accept it. You can't do that. They didn't want the fallout from it because even the Japanese could see this is a stupid, idiotic move. But at the end of the article, I think something, actually not at the end of the article, it's only halfway through, but it's as far as I read, it makes a very important point. It says, Obama envisions a world without nuclear weapons and moves steadily toward unilateral. In other words, we're just going to get rid of our nukes. Doesn't matter what everybody else does. We're going to do it, and that means everybody's just going to follow along. Yeah, well, I'm going to talk about another article on Iran here in a second to prove that this guy is just naive and stupid on this stuff. But we envision a world without tyrants and thugs willing to use them against us. Now, this is his whole vision. We do not fear nuclear weapons in the hands of Britain or France, countries that share our love of freedom. Here's the most important point, though, that although he would like to see a world without nuclear weapons because it will be safer and more peaceful, that's what he's basically telling us, safer and more peaceful, we didn't have nukes prior to 1945, or at least we didn't even have the hydrogen bomb prior to 1945. We're working on it. Was the world a safer, more peaceful place, Paula, prior to 1945? Absolutely not. We had two world wars.
Right.
So now all of a sudden we're going to get rid of nukes and we're going to go back to that kind of peace and tranquility and safety that we used to have. Nuclear weapons have stopped the world from going to war with itself. Yeah, there have been wars and battles, but there have not been world wars, and there will not be world wars as long as we have nukes. A guy just doesn't get it. He's clueless, he's incompetent, he's naive. But as I said, when it comes to Iran, I found a good article on the New York Post, believe it or not, and that's a good paper. And they have a lot of good – they're really good for sports and entertainment, that kind of stuff, but they do some good articles. This was written by James J. Carafano, okay, and it came out today in the New York Post. And it says, Obama's taking us back to the bad old days of Carter. Now, remember – the president won a Nobel Peace Prize just months after taking office because he made it clear that he was going to make nice with all the evil regimes out there. Unfortunately, he's been proven now a failure on that. We've got Iran emboldened by his naiveness to try and blow one of our embassies up on our home territory, and no less in Washington, D.C. I mean, my gosh, the nation's capital. So let's see what he had to say in his article. He said, somebody in the Iranian government backed a planned terrorist attack in America's backyard. No surprise there. Tehran didn't earn its reputation as the world's premier state sponsor of terrorism for nothing. Nor is it terribly shocking to hear that the plot was intended to be carried out on U.S. soil. America these days must appear an open target for the likes of Iran. Now, this summer, President Obama revealed his new and improved strategy for combining or for combating terrorism. But guess what? What did it say about Iran? Almost nothing. Despite Iran's record, it merited just one mention in 19 pages of this president, this commander-in-chief's plan and strategy for combating terrorism. Wow. Mm-hmm. Nice job, Mr. Incompetent. Okay, so the article goes on and talks about how Jimmy Carter, you know, what happened under Jimmy Carter? Well, Iran was emboldened and Russia was emboldened by his naive and make nice with evil regimes attitude, just like Obama. Iran took over our embassy and held hostages for a few years there until President Reagan got elected. And if you remember, Paula, President Reagan throughout his campaign said, the day I'm elected, we will get our people out of Iran, and we will do whatever it takes to get them out. In other words, he was saying, we're going to come blow the holy boop out of you guys. Mm-hmm. And the day after Reagan got elected, if you remember, Iran called the White House hotline. Hey, yeah, you can have your people back. Come on, come get them. Yeah, no problem, Ronnie. Hey, it's cool. We were just kind of messing around with you guys. I mean, they gave them up immediately. There was no posturing required. They knew that Reagan meant business, and that was the end of that. Now, what else happened under Jimmy Carter? Well, the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan. And I know a bunch of libtards today will say, oh, but we invaded Afghanistan. No, we went after the Taliban. We went and protected the Afghani people and got rid of the Taliban. We didn't invade a nation and take over. The Soviet Union wanted to take over and put their own regime in place. Did not want to hold free elections and attack the Afghan military. Okay, we went after the Taliban. We did not go after the government and the people of Afghanistan. So there's a huge difference there. But yes, under Jimmy Carter, the Soviets had no reason to not go and invade any country they wanted to because Carter was weak and not going to do anything. So we are back to that stage now with this president. The world looks at him and sees him as a weak, weak leader. You know, here's something that happened recently in Georgia, the country of Georgia. You know, when this administration was negotiating a update to the START nuclear agreement, what happened while they were doing that? Let me back up. I'm just going to read it straight out of the release here. It happened when press reports revealed that American intelligence had concluded in a classified report late last year that Russia's military intelligence was responsible for a bomb blast outside the U.S. embassy in Tbilisi, Georgia. The bombing inconveniently occurred while the White House was pressing for approval of the new START nuclear agreement with Moscow and trumpeting the successes of resetting relations with the Russians. Yeah, we reset them back to the Carter days when they know they can blow stuff up and we're not going to do anything about it. What our president, Obama, didn't do was express an ounce of outrage at what the Russian government had just done, and to one of our embassies, no less. So, good article, again, by James J. Carafano in the New York Post. Obama's taking us back to the battle days of Carter. And I found another interesting article. This was on The Hill. You can go to thehill.com and look for Obama, victim or professional victim. So the question, really, that this article is posing, is he a victim of, let me back up. Are people, particularly conservatives, attacking Obama on his policies because of his name, his color of his skin, where he's from, his associations, or is it really his policies? So the question is he a victim, a true victim, or is he a professional victim? In other words, he's playing the victim to try and win a second term. And so, you know, one of the things he said in the debt ceiling debate over the summer when he was getting frustrated with where things were going, he said, Ronald Reagan wouldn't be sitting here. In other words, he was impatient. He didn't feel that he needed to or had to be sitting there trying to negotiate the raising of the debt ceiling. Well, Reagan wouldn't have been sitting there because Reagan wouldn't have had to go through that. He's trying to say that Reagan repeatedly raised the debt ceiling, and he did, but it was small amounts. And when you look at what the debt was back then as a percentage of GDP, it was significantly different than what it is today. And there's a reason why we have a debt ceiling, and that is to stop you from just driving this country further and further into debt. But anyways, he makes a good case for what may be going on here and what we're going to see. And I've said this in the past, that things are going to escalate and they're going to play the race card on the left significantly. But he makes the case for plan on seeing more and more of this kind of, not coming from him, he can't do it himself, but from people in the party saying that we are going after him not on policy and substance, we're going after him for something else, whether it be the color of his skin or the way he talks or, you know, his name, Hussein, you know, whatever it is. When in fact, the reality is, I don't know of anybody that doesn't, that dislikes him for who he is. They dislike him for his destructive policies and what he's doing to this country. So again, it's on the Hill, and an article by Sam Youngman on Obama victim or professional victim. And here's kind of the end of the article, what he says. When a verdict on these questions is reached among voters, someone will be punished. If Obama is punished for claiming victimhood, he loses. But if the Republicans are judged to have targeted Obama instead of the economy, they'll pay a price. That's not going to happen. The Republicans are making it clear that this is about the economy and about jobs, and his plan for creating jobs is really driving us further into debt and doing more of the same. You know, the definition of insanity is continuing to do the same things over that have failed. I mean, just repeating failed policies and practices over and over and over and thinking you're going to get a different outcome. And that's what he's trying to tell us. Another stimulus is going to give us a different outcome. The reality is, if another stimulus were really going to give us a different outcome, it couldn't be half of the previous stimulus. It would have to be at least as big as the last stimulus. But it doesn't make any sense. So it doesn't make any sense what he's produced. So what my belief is this president really wants to do to us is to make himself look like a victim, like he tried to pass a bill and create jobs and reduce the debt, which it doesn't do at all. It's all a sham. It's smoke and mirrors, the debt reduction. And, of course, that debt reduction is going to occur over 10 years, which means it'll never happen. But the spending is going to occur tomorrow, all in one day. So it's all smoke and mirrors. It's a scam. And he's then going to use that to run against the Republican Party as the party of no, no, no. It's true. I'm a Republican, and I'm of the party that says no. No to destroying the Constitution. No to driving my children further into debt. No to kowtowing to tyrants and dictators around the world. No to trying to downplaying our exceptionalism. No to calling the United States of America bad and evil. And no to really literally pissing on our founders' graves that founded this great nation with a Declaration of Independence and a Constitution that stands above all other government structures and statements in the history of mankind. Yeah, I'm against all of that, absolutely. What I'm for is following the Constitution, and this administration does everything it can to look for ways to get around it, to get around it. That is a violation of his and their oaths of office. So when these liberals throw their lot in with the likes of Occupy Wall Street, who have made it clear in all the interviews that you want to look at, go look at any of the YouTube stuff, and because you're not going to see it in mainstream media very much, but even in the mainstream media, they've made it clear. They can't stand the Constitution. They can't stand capitalism. They want to destroy the structure of government that we have today, although they want it to be bigger because they want it to give everybody everything and steal from everybody that has anything. That is a violation of their oath of office. They have violated their oaths of office. It's disgraceful. It's despicable. And we need to get rid of them. All right. There's my final rant for the day. So, Paula, what
yes.
have you been? It's been a couple weeks since we've really been on doing this. I did broadcast Monday solo. That was okay. And I kept it fairly short, although Dr. Kaufman came on with us. But what have you been looking at? What have you been hearing? What have you been thinking about in the last couple weeks?
Well, I think that there's just a little bit too much going on with the economy, and I like to watch Morning Joe in the morning, and, you know, there's a lot of good points that they come out with, and, you know, what people are feeling about the economy and what's coming up with the next election cycle and how are they going to vote, and, you know, morale is down, and people are still losing their houses and their cars, and jobs are not being given to them. And I did hear recently, though, that something to the effect of this Made in America thing that people are on, this kick that people are on all of a sudden. Now I saw something in the news the other day, something to the effect of, we're realizing now that it's more cost effective to keep the jobs in this country than it is to outsource them.
Yeah.
That kind of threw me for a loop.
Yeah, well, it's true though. It is true. And there are some ways that we can help create the environment for that. One thing that we've talked about many times is that corporations shouldn't be paying taxes. Now, I know the liberals out there go, what, Tom? Not pay taxes? I mean, my gosh, they make so much money, they've got to pay taxes. Corporations don't pay taxes. We pay their taxes for them. They pass their costs on. It's just like anything else. Taxes are just a cost to any small and large corporation alike, and they pass it on to the consumer. So they don't pay any taxes. We're paying their taxes for them. So,
right, and
so
I just saw today, you know, not to cut you off or anything, but in the Washington Post, there was actually a quick article about how a quarter of the millionaires in this country pay a smaller share of their income in federal taxes than many middle-class families. And that's according to a new congressional analysis that offers fresh support for Obama's push to raise taxes on the nation's wealthiest households.
Well, now you know what, you're taking an article from the Washington Compost, and they're going to lie like they usually do. They always lie. I'm going to tell you exactly why wealthy people pay less, a percentage less. They pay more money, but they pay a percentage less. Let me ask you this, Paula. Let's say you're rich. Let's say you got $100 million. Because you had a company and you earned it, you sold the company, whatever, you earned that money. Now, you paid taxes. You paid corporate taxes. You paid personal taxes on anything that went personally into your bank account, on all of that as an earning, okay?
Right.
Now, you've got $100 million in the bank, but you're going to invest it. You're going to buy stock. You're going to buy other things, other investments, and now – on a yearly basis, you're going to pay not income tax, because do you have a job and pay yourself a salary? Do you work for somebody? No, you're rich. You got $100 million. All you earn on an annual basis is capital gains on your investments. And capital gains is at 15%. So what the Post and all these libtards are trying to tell us is that you've already paid personal and corporate taxes on all of the money you've earned over the years, and now that you're just sitting there relaxing at home and wealthy and making investments and earning, yes, millions on your investments because you're wealthy, that you should somehow pay a higher tax. You've already paid all those taxes. Now on your future earnings, it's capital gains. And why are capital gains taxed at a lower rate? Because we want people with money and corporations with money to invest. And what do they invest in? They invest in buildings, property, other businesses, startup businesses, buildings are going to be rented and leased by fire departments and police departments and schools and new communities that are being developed in low-income areas and high-income areas and on and on and on. They invest. They invest in pensions or you know, securities that may be used eventually by various pensions. And so the list goes on and on. If we try and penalize them for, number one, being rich and stifle their investments here in the U.S., all it does is cause job loss, businesses to not ever be started and created or not expand. It's not good. So what they're doing is demonizing the very people that invest. And how many times does this president say, we need to invest in infrastructure, we need to invest in schools, there are rich people doing all of those investments already, not to the same degree that the government does, but most of those investments that he's talking about are at the state level. They're not federal entities. Bridges and roads and schools and fire departments and police departments are local and state entities. What he's wanting to do is to buy the allegiance / ownership of these via giving states money, and then, but every time that the federal government under Obama has given states money, there's always been, and by the way, yes, we're giving you this money, but you're going to now do this, this, and this. There's always new catches and new snags to accepting the money. And that's why there was one headline today that this one city, I don't know what the city was because I just read the headline, is declaring bankruptcy rather than taking federal loan money because they don't want all of the caveats that are going to come with that. So this is what the Washington Compost doesn't tell you, that rich people pay less because, yes, they already paid corporate and personal income taxes. They now have investments, and they live on their investments. That's sort of like, you know, one day when I retire, I'll have a pension. Now, my military pension is just the military, you know, gives me money on a monthly basis. But my other pension from the airline will be the money in a lump sum in a variety of different investments. And every time I take money out, I'm going to have to pay a capital gains tax or some form of a tax every time I withdraw that money. And yet I've spent my entire life paying income tax on the money that I've earned. So that's and yes, there are some vehicles where you were like a 401k where it's pre-tax. So in other words, that money comes out of my pay before taxes. But when I start withdrawing money from my 401k one day, I will have to pay that at personal income tax rates. But there are other vehicles, investment vehicles, that people use for pensions that are after tax. So they've already paid income tax on it, but they're still going to have to pay a capital gains tax on down the road. So they're actually paying taxes twice. And that's what the Washington Post never tells you. Rich people have already paid, and now they're paying again. But, yes, it's at a lower rate. But That's absolutely not unfair. In fact, it's way higher. If you now add the 15% capital gains tax to whatever they paid originally on income or corporate tax, which could be anywhere from, you know, 22 to 35%, add another 15% onto any of those percentages, and all of a sudden, you know, you're up in the 40s or 50s is what they're really paying. So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me. The Compost always lies. Some writers.
I'll know not to read that one anymore.
they have some columnists that actually do write some pretty good articles, but overall, the Washington Post is like the New York Times, the New York Slimes, as Mark Levin calls them, the New York Slimes. The New York Slimes really does. This is not scientific at all, but over the years, the articles that I've seen that are just outright, flat-out lies, the New York Times is just unbelievable. I mean, it's almost anything that has anything to do with politics. But every now and then they have a rogue writer write something that's pretty good. But overall, I normally will not read the opinion section, the politics section of the New York Times because they lie. They just lie all the time. And The perfect example is the one where I just decided I actually had a subscription to the Palm Beach Post, which pretty much just gets all of its main articles from the New York Times. And one of the articles was back, if you remember, Paula, when we made the – it wasn't the surge, but it was a big push into Fallujah in Iraq. It had been overrun with insurgents, I mean, thousands and thousands of insurgents. And so the Marines and Army went in heavily armed and wiped out, literally killed about 4,000 enemy combatants, 4,000 in 4 days. And we had a few casualties. I think it was in like around the 15 to 20 range. But we lost, when you think about it, and this is guerrilla warfare in a city. We lost 15 to 20 soldiers, which is bad. And I don't like seeing any of that. But we killed 4,000 insurgents. And what do you think the New York Times had to say about that? The Marines' struggle in Fallujah as the insurgents regroup to the north. Now, that leads you to believe that the Marines are having a hard time. In 4 days, they killed 4,000 people. What the real gist of the article was that in the final few days where the last hardcore insurgents were there hiding behind doors with bombs strapped to them or under beds and just sacrificing themselves to try and take out a Marine or a Ranger. That's all they were doing. They were desperate. So, in other words, the reality was the article should have said insurgents desperately cling to suicide tactics in an effort to kill even just one Marine, while the Marines have killed 4,000. That would have been a more appropriate article. But what did they do? They made it sound like our military was struggling to do their job, which was an outright lie. And then they claimed that the insurgents were forming a counterattack to the north. There were none left. They were all dead. There no such counterinsurgency ever took place, ever even attempted to take place. It was an outright lie. So that's when I said, you know how I feel about the military, and I know you do too, Paula. That's when I said, New York Times, if I run out of toilet paper, I know where to go. Otherwise,
oh,
I'm not reading.
Too much information for me.
Yeah. Well, that's, I hate to say it, but it's true. We've come close a couple times on, you know, those long 9-hour flights on the airplane where we're getting low on supplies in the lavatories, and I go, hey, I got a New York Times up here in the cockpit. Nobody's even looked at it. Just let me know if you need it.
Lord.
So, anyway. All right. Well, what else, Paul? Is there anything else we should talk about?
No. I think, you know what? It's pretty much the same old, and like I mentioned, morale is low, and people are tired, and it does, you know, and even the small businesses, they're not going to hire even just one person because they don't know what the healthcare bill is supposed to do or is going to be doing, or, you know, it's just.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot of companies, a huge number of companies are going to drop the people that they are covering because it pays, you know. When the first proposed healthcare plan, it was a percentage of a person's salary. So I used to go around when I was campaigning and tell people that, you know, if you make less, you know, you're a large company like I was at an airline, if you make less than $100,000 a year, your company's probably going to drop your healthcare insurance and drop you into the government insurance plan because it pays. If you're making over $100,000, no, it won't pay. The penalty will be high enough that it will be more costly for them to do that than to keep you on their own, you know, coverage. Well, guess what? The bill changed. When it got in the Senate, or the Senate wrote their own bill, which is unconstitutional. We'll talk about that again someday. But when the Senate wrote its own bill, they reduced it from being a percentage to just a flat $2,000. There is no health care plan that I know of anywhere in the country that will give you reasonable health care coverage for $2,000 a year. It just doesn't exist. So what they basically did was they are telling all businesses out there, if you want to be a good business and attract, you know, the best employees, then you'll tell them, we give you comprehensive health care coverage, which is probably going to cost anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 for a typical family. And we're willing to pay that because that's considered a benefit. But a large percentage, I would guess at least 50% of major companies out there will not care about there and say, hey, you're going to get free health care from the government. You're going to get health care from the government, and they're going to provide it to you, and we're going to pay them a penalty for not providing it to you ourselves. And what's that penalty going to be? $2,000 a year to the federal government. Now, think about a large corporation, Paula, that has 50,000 employees, and it just saved $8,000 per employee. We're talking $400 million it's going to save by not covering those employees with health care insurance and paying the penalty to the government. Now, can the government now provide health care insurance to those 50,000 employees with just $2,000 a month coming from this corporation? No, absolutely not. They can't. Nobody can cover that, not even the government. So it's going to raise our taxes, or it's going to raise health care costs, and somebody's got to pay for it somehow, and it's not going to be the government. The government doesn't pay for anything. We pay for it. So that's the scam that's going on just with that one little sliver of the health care bill. Costs are going to go up. People are going to be in a crappier, worse government-run system. Doesn't give them all the benefits that their company did, and the companies are going to be saving money in the end. Now, the good companies just aren't going to do that to the employees, but their competitors will, and now they're at a competitive disadvantage when they don't do that, and at some point they probably will be forced to do that to their employees and just shrug their shoulders and say, sorry, at least you have health care insurance. Yeah, it's the government insurance. It's crappy, but at least you have something. And they're going to have to do that. So This is a system devised to drive all Americans into a government-run system, and when that day finally occurs, then the government say, well, we're now the only healthcare system in the country, and everybody else is out of business. We're now like Canada and Europe and everybody else, and we make the rules. And mm-hmm. they've essentially via the rules of the so-called free market, they've driven our country into a nationalized healthcare system, which is not good. It doesn't work well in any other country, and we've had that discussion before, but nobody can tell me a country that it works better than it does in the United States of America. You're going to get worse healthcare. You're going to wish we went back to the old system. So that's why we've got to get away from that. And that's just one example out of 2,000 pages of bureaucracy and regulation that is going to destroy our current healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the New York Post or the Washington Post is going to tell you about that because they really don't care. They, you know, this is not about making America a better place. This is about a vision for some utopia that can never be achieved. And until we get there and realize that it's unachievable, they'll still say, well, at least we achieved it, though. You know,
yeah.
It goes back to Saul Alinsky's book, dedicating his book to the devil, the first rebel who won his own kingdom. And that's the mindset of the liberals. Hey, at least we won our own kingdom. Yeah, but it's hell. Yeah, but at least we won our own kingdom. That's just, it's idiocy. So that's why I call the Wall Street occupiers an idiot movement, because that's what they are. They're stupid. They don't get it. There may be some legitimate claims out there, but they're incoherent as an organization, as a group. You look at any Tea Party organization, it's very clear what they want. Limited federal government, follow the Constitution. It's that simple. It couldn't be any more simple. And I want some libtard to tell me why following the Constitution is a bad thing. But they can't. They're going to make up some crap about the past and slavery and, you know, our founders were slave owners. No, they weren't all slave owners. Many of them weren't. And we never would have had a union if we had not allowed that to begin with. In other words, not if we had tried writing a constitution as Thomas Jefferson had wanted, as James Madison had wanted, that outlawed slavery, there never would have been a union. But what they did was they slyly created a constitution that would one day, with some amendments, end slavery. And that's precisely what happened. And look what happened. We had a civil war over it. It wasn't like it was just going to happen. It was going to be bloody and ugly, and we took those steps. And our founders made that possible, okay? And so we have the great country that we have today because of that. But they're going to make crap up about, you know, why following the Constitution is bad, and it's not true at all. When we follow the Constitution, we've always done well. We've done the best that we've ever done during those periods. When we get away from the Constitution, well, it's the rule of law. If you're not going to follow the rule of law, then it's anarchy. You don't really have a government. And who really is in charge? And what is there to protect you? There's nothing to protect you if you're not going to follow the rule of law, because it's whatever we say it is today, and whoever's in charge gets to say. And that's not good for anybody. So, all right, Paula, I'll give you the last word. Everybody will be back next Monday night, 7 p.m. again. Same bat time, same bat channel. And we'll be talking about some more current events. We may have a guest. I don't know if Dick's got somebody lined up for us, but we'll put it on the website and on Facebook. And we'll also put it out on Twitter at The American Hour. Follow us on Twitter at The American Hour. But Paula, you get the last word.
Shout out to our troops serving overseas. Your families love and miss you and want you home. Just a quick prayer for them. Lord, hold our troops in your loving hands. Protect them as they protect us. Bless them and their families for the selfless acts they perform for us in our time of need.
Awesome. All right, Paula, thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. Yeah, have a great rest of the week and great weekend, and we'll see you again on Monday.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.